The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. I'm Ben Maxwell. On this week's episode, we get two very different perspectives on J1 Match Day 25, with firstly, Nagoya correspondent Adrian Cerna on Grampus's remarkable winning run, and then in part two, Kawasaki correspondent Neil Debnam reflects on a massive missed opportunity for Frontale in Osaka on Saturday night. The J-Talk Podcast starts now. Our first guest this week is no doubt Cockahoop after his Nagoya side continued to run rampant over the past weekend. Adrian Cerna, welcome back to J-Talk. How are you?
Hey, good. How are you?
I'm excellent, thank you. And I had a check back, Adrian, to see when your first podcast appearance was. It was in the middle of May after you lost 3-0 at Nagasaki, and you were obviously rock bottom of the J1 table at that time. We had no idea where, you know, if things would be turning around. Obviously, we wanted the manager sacked, and here we are suddenly now after 25 games played, and your side is knocking on the door of the top half of the table. Can you believe it?
It's really unbelievable of what has happened these past 2 months. Yeah.
So let's talk about, obviously, Saturday's a massive win at Iwata, but also how exactly Yahiro Kazuma has turned things around for Grampus. So, yes, firstly, let's talk about what happened at the Yamaha Stadium on Saturday night. I guess you've probably been wondering, you know, this has probably been too good to be true, and you've been wondering when it would stop. When I asked you to come on the podcast last week, you were a little bit nervous about the Urawa game, and obviously you smashed them 4-1, and then, yes, you go down, you go across to Shizuoka, of course, to Iwata, and smash them 6-1. It's just been remarkable, hasn't it?
Yeah, as you mentioned, before the Urawa game, I was still a little bit, I wasn't really sure that Nagoya was going to be able to keep this momentum. But then in Urawa, as you said, we smashed them 4-1. Nagoya doesn't really have a long story of winning Urawa recently, especially. So I think this was really, really difficult game in terms of like a mental condition from the players and from the staff. And in the end, things went really well. And I think that was a huge turning point for Nagoya. After that, as you said, Shimizu and Iwata have been just continuing this momentum for Nagoya where all the players are performing really nice, where the Joe is in his best moment, where the defense is right now proving doing a good job, at least now, right now in this moment of the season. So yeah, I think that before that game I was a little bit concerned about it, but now I believe that this team is capable of beating very, very strong rivals.
Yeah, absolutely. And so in the Iwata on the Saturday night, your first two goals were scored by two players that came across in the transfer window, Takashi Kanai and, of course, Naoki Maeda. And both of those players have scored four goals apiece in this seven-match winning run.
Yes.
And they've obviously both had a massive impact. And, Kanai, he's electric, isn't he?
Oh, he's been great so far. Both Kanai and Maeda have been great signs for Nagoya. I think I usually go with lots of Japanese Nagoya supporters, and their biggest concern at the start of the season was not only the defense but the lack of productive football from the Japanese players. So if I don't know if you remember, but the first games of Nagoya in this year, only the Brazilian players scored goals. It was Joe, it was Gabriel Xavier, or it was Rocha, who is now injured. So only the Brazilian players scored, and that was not enough because the defense was not doing well, and then the Japanese players like Tamada or like Aria, like they were not performing the way they were. You know, you cannot win the league, or you cannot do well if only your two Brazilians score goals. So actually this Kanai, especially Kanai and Maeda, but also the other side signings like that Nagoya made this summer, like Eduardo. I think he's also being another Brazilian, but he's being also a very one of the key players in keeping the defense strong, that which was one of the biggest players for Nagoya. And all teams have to be constructed from the defense and from the goalkeeper, right? And Nagoya had the big problem in the defense, and especially with the signings again of Kanai and of Maeda. We have to remember that Kanai, he's a defense, but he's scoring goals. So you have these positions that were Nagoya was really weak, and with only three key players in defense and midfielders, now you have they score goals. They also defend, and then you have also Joe and Gabriel Xavier, the two Brazilian stars in Nagoya, that they now have more freedom to actually perform. So I think that these three key signs that Nagoya made this summer have revolutionized completely the team.
Yeah, it's absolutely remarkable. As you say, yeah, Kanai is a left back, but yes, he scored four goals in his last five games. So absolutely remarkable. And Maeda, I've said it, I think, the past couple of weeks, I seem to mention him every week because he's involved in so much of what Nagoya do going forward. And as I say, he got the second goal here. And then it was Ryuji Izumi who got the third.
Yes.
And, Joe is just absolutely flying. It's remarkable. He scored 12 of his 18 goals in his last six appearances. It all have come in this winning run, of course. He was suspended for the Match Day 23 game that Nagoya won 3-0 over Tosu. But, Joe got the fourth and the sixth goal, and it was great to see Gabriel Xavier bob up with the fifth goal, Adrian. He's at sixth of the season. Joe picked him out with a lovely pass across the box and a lovely little dink inside Taishi Taguchi that I'm sure a lot of the Nagoya fans will have enjoyed. Taguchi getting his pants pulled down a little bit there, and Xavier finishing remarkably well. And then, of course, there was the consolation for Iwata at the end, but to say the horse had bolted by then, it would be a massive understatement. So, it's getting to the point now where I have to ask you where you think this is going to stop, because obviously you're playing Nagasaki at home in the first game back after the international break, and then you play three top half teams in a row in Kawasaki, Cerezo Osaka, and FC Tokyo. But I mean, the form that you're in this winning run, of course, you've taken down Kashima, you've smashed Urawa, and you've just smashed Iwata. So where will this end?
I'm actually also really, I should mention that the Nagoya didn't lose to Hiroshima. I think that was also like a good starting point of this, because, Hiroshima was in a moment where they could have scored against Nagoya many goals, and Nagoya was able to keep a draw in that game. So, as you mentioned, not only against Urawa, against Iwata these days, I think Nagoya now he's able to also to play against strong teams. So, as you said, Nagasaki is probably, I think Nagoya should win that game, but then Kawasaki is going to be a tough one. I think at some point maybe this momentum for Nagoya might end, but I think that it's not like before where Nagoya had a big problem that needed really three signs to solve. I think right now Nagoya has a complete team. The problem Nagoya had was the first part of the season. Nagoya had only one half of the team built, and that was ridiculous, because all the teams came to Nagoya and scored 3-4 goals against them. So right now Nagoya has a full completed team, which means that Nagoya, of course, will probably lose some games from now on, but I think Nagoya is not going to get relegated, which is probably the biggest concern as for me as a Nagoya fan. I think Nagoya is now in a position where we can say it's not going to be relegated, but Nagoya won 7 straight games, I don't think Nagoya has enough time to actually maybe get into Asia Champions League, which could be the only realistic goal at this moment. But even if it's, I think it's only 10 points behind Champions League at this moment, which is still, there's a lot of games coming from. So I think it's not an impossible thing, but I honestly feel that at some point, maybe in Kawasaki, Nagoya might drop some points.
Yeah, well, you would think it'd have to happen eventually, and I guess that would probably the most likely one on paper. But as I say, yeah, you've just been running a roughshod over all of your opponents at the moment. And yeah, I mean, your points total, obviously, seven, eight games ago was looking especially dire. But as you say, yeah, relegation looks to have been, not obviously mathematically avoided with so many games to go. But yes, you're now 5 points clear of the relegation zone, and as I said, knocking on the door of the top half of the table. I mean, you're on 31 points, and Urawa, who are ninth, are on 32. So, and you have a game in hand on them, of course, that you will you make up, not for a long time, of course, not until the end of October, but that's against Sapporo. So,
that's another tough one. Yeah,
absolutely, Sapporo. Absolutely, definitely. Mm. So, all right, let's go back and talk about a couple of these games and a couple of the other signings that came over during the transfer window. You made a really good point there about Nagoya's team being incomplete in the first half of the season, and we've talked about Maeda, we've talked about Kanai, and you mentioned Eduardo Neto, which was great, and I'll remember to ask Neil about him, because a lot of us were scratching our head as to why Kawasaki would let Neto go, but they did, and yes, the Nagoya have certainly reaped the benefits of that. Also, you brought in a brand new central defensive partnership, Adrian, of course, of Yuichi Maruyama from FC Tokyo and Shinosuke Nakatani from Reysol, right? I think he was at Reysol, wasn't he? Yeah, that's right.
Yes, Nakatani, yes.
Yes, so how have they... they've obviously settled in especially well. I mean, yes, the nil-nil with Hiroshima was that you mentioned as well in match day 17. It looked like it put down a bit of a marker for those two, that they'd settled in pretty much straight away. And from there, yes, obviously, the whole team has taken off from that point. And, we've mentioned the... we've mentioned Neto, Maeda, and Kanai, but maybe talk a little bit about the new central defensive partnership.
Yes, I think both Maruyama and Nakatani, I think they're both giving I don't think that they're like world class, not world class, but you know, I don't think they're like best 11 of the J League class players. I don't think they're like super players, but I think that they really fitted well in a team that had already a really good goalkeeper, that had some really good midfielders like Gabriel Xavier, like, you know. So I think that when you have like this puzzle and Nagoya had these pieces, especially in the defense and in the midfield, where they had this big problem, and now they got this signing, especially with Nakatani and with Maruyama, that now they fit correctly in what Kazama wanted to play. I mean, sometimes football it's easier than that they want to. Sometimes some coaches want to make experiments, and Kazama has been doing some weird things in the first half of the season. Of course, I blame him, and I really want to apologize for that, but I think that also Kazama changed a little bit his mind and stopped doing weird experiments, and now recently he's been playing 4-4-2. Sometimes football is so easy. Sometimes it's only playing this simple, put the right pieces in the field, put the right tactics, and things will work on. And with the new signings, with Maruyama and with Nakatani, again, a team that has made 5 signs in summer, that has it's almost half of the team that you have changed. That meant that the team was bad from the beginning, that had huge problems. Usually when a team has these problems, usually you change the coach, but in this case, I guess Nagoya had a lot of money, and they really believed that Kazama was the right person to give them the enough confidence to manage these new players, and I think that was in the end that was a good decision. And Maruyama and Nakatani have fitting well again with Eduardo and with Kanai and with Maeda, but that's 5 signings. That's a whole new team.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned the goalkeeper there, obviously the Australian Mitchell Langerak, who came in the start of this season. And then there's obviously Joe, who's grabbed all the headlines in recent weeks. So basically, yeah, from the end of last season, you've basically at the moment playing, you know, seven different regulars than would have ever played for Nagoya before. And these five that have come in during the summer have obviously hit the ground running and been fantastic. And, Langerak, obviously, you saw a lot of goals go past him in that run where Grampus didn't win for, I think it was 15 games, wasn't it? But, obviously he can't have been blamed for too many of those, not too many clangers in there from him. But, yeah, the defence was very shoddy, obviously, early on and right through to the World Cup break. But, with that added steel in the centre of defence and obviously with Neto holding things in defensive midfield, yes, Langerak's job has become a little bit calmer, a little bit easier, perhaps.
Yeah, I think so. I think in terms of mentality, goalkeepers, especially good goalkeepers, really change when they have like a different defense or when they have a defense where they feel confident. And I said in the case of Langerak, he in the first half of the season he made really good saves, but then he also had some pretty bad decisions that the goalkeeper in J1 could not really afford to make, and that cost him some goals. But then I made the comparison of for example David De Gea, which is saving all the distance. He's a goalkeeper in terms of physically, it looks like Langerak a little bit, you know, it's a tall thin guy. And David De Gea in Manchester United, he's a world-class goalkeeper, but then in the World Cup with the Spanish national team, it was a disaster. And it's not because he's a bad keeper, it's because the players he had in the defense were not the players that he felt confident with. And for Langerak, this was like this for the first 6 months of the season. He didn't feel confident, so he had to make some strange, adventures going to try to get the ball, and that didn't work, and he conceded many goals. But right now he feels confident with a new defense. He plays the ball with his feet. He feels more confident, and because of that he's showing now the work. I wouldn't say world class, but you know the probably he's the best, in my opinion, the best goalkeeper in the J League right now. And in the first, in the next few games, I think we're gonna hear about Langerak a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. And so let's try and wrap this up, Adrian. It's obviously been remarkable, and it basically, as we've both mentioned, it basically began with that 0-0 draw at home against Hiroshima, top visiting bottom in match day 17. And at the time we thought Hiroshima were beginning to have a wobble, but what we didn't know is that Nagoya were beginning to unleash hell and fury on the rest of the J League. So the next weekend was obviously when the typhoon passed through, and the match day 18 at home against Sapporo was postponed. So it all got going in match day 19 when Grampus won for the first time since match day 2. And I mean, I've mentioned a couple of times in the last couple of weeks that
since match day 2,
Grampus only won two of their first 17 games. But of course, I'd forgotten at the time that you won the first two games of the season, didn't you? You beat Gamba and you beat Iwata.
Yeah.
And then
I went to that game.
Yeah. And then you didn't win for 15 games. And the first game back after the World Cup, you lost 3-1 at Urawa. And then that home draw against Hiroshima, the first win since match day 2 came away at Sendai with goals from Joe and Naoki Maeda. And at the time, I guess we thought, well, okay, it's great to see that there is a little bit of life in Grampus, but we didn't know obviously what was to come. So since that game, since the Sendai win, have you had a favorite of these wins? I mean, beating Gamba again 3-2, or you know, obviously everybody likes to beat Urawa.
Yeah.
But I mean, did you have a favorite?
Of course, Urawa. Everyone, as you say, everyone loves to beat Urawa. I think the victories against Sendai or Gamba Osaka, which was 3-2, I mean, I wasn't really sure about that. I maybe could, you know, see those victories are maybe some accidents or victories that, you know, come against weak teams. So maybe, you know, it's you're still not sure that the team is performing well. Then Nagoya won against Kashima 4-2 again. But again, that's the kind of game that can happen with Nagoya. Lots of goals in favor, but also conceding two goals. Then I actually personally went to the Yokohama Marinos game against Nagoya in Yokohama. Mm. That was 1-2 for Nagoya, but I think Nagoya deserved to win by a better difference. I think that game Nagoya started to show that they were not going to fight for relegation. I think that Nagoya was going to do something better than relegation. And then Sagan Tosu 3-0. You know, I like Fernando Torres, so you know, I didn't know how to feel about that game. And then we have to mention that then Nagoya lost the game in the Emperor's Cup, but then Nagoya played with many substitutes and also Nagoya conceded three goals in the extra time, so it was a kind of a weird game. I think it should not be considered in the whole run. And then of course Urawa 4-1 at home. Everyone wants to beat Urawa. Everyone, especially in front of such a big crowd. The game was in Toyota Stadium with thousands of Urawa fans because it's a August game, and that means lots of fans coming to Toyota Stadium. So winning Urawa in front of everyone was great. Four goals. I even said that, you know, if Nagoya scored the fifth goal against Urawa, I was gonna name my son Kazama. Okay. In the end, it was only 4-1.
Oh yeah, I meant to ask you, how's the tattoo fund coming along?
We're still working on that. We have the crowdfunding. We only have 3,000 yen so far. So.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Well. Yeah. We should make a note that Adrian's taking donations for a tattoo on his butt cheek that Dan Orlowitz mentioned on last week's podcast, of course. So yeah, absolutely remarkable. We've mentioned Joe numerous times. Obviously, he's just he's run amok, basically two hat tricks in this run, and I think he scored two goals twice as well, and as I said, 12 in total. Yes. In his last six league games. Absolutely brilliant. So yes,
that's a monster. Yeah.
Oh, just incredible. So let's obviously in recent weeks your side has been in the relegation zone, so I'm sure you've been paying a lot of attention, Adrian, to the other teams around.
Yes.
There, and you mentioned Tosu, and you're a Fernando Torres fan, as am I, of course. He's an ex-Liverpool player, so he was one of my favourites for a long time there, a number of years ago. So we were both at Ajinomoto Stadium on Sunday night. Unfortunately, Torres couldn't score, and FC Tokyo couldn't either. It ended a 0-0 in front of a crowd of just over 30,000. Tokyo continue to struggle, but for Tosu, was this a decent enough away point, do you think?
I think it's 1 point away against FC Tokyo, which is third right now in the table. So I think that point is good for Tosu. I think so, yeah.
All right, so that leaves them 3 points from safety. Yokohama and Kashiwa both have 29 points, so they are 3 points ahead of Tosu. Yokohama moved above Reysol and up to 14th on goal difference. These two sides met at the Nissan Stadium on Saturday night, and Sho Ito Brace led Yokohama to a 3-1 win over Reysol. The third goal, though, was some of the most shambolic defending you'll ever see.
Yeah, that was really bad.
From Park and Kirihata. That was just an absolute gift for Ito. That sealed the deal after Yusuke Sagawa reduced the deficit to 2-1 with 18 minutes to go. But then, yes, Ito was given that gift with 12 minutes left, and that was that for Reysol. They are in a fair bit of trouble, I think, Adrian, Kashiwa Reysol.
Yeah, I think so. I think at this point of the league, you can start to see the trends of the teams, you know, playing better or getting some points, and the teams that start to destroy themselves with this kind of ridiculous plays. You know, these are things that can happen to you in the first or in the second week of the league, but not at this moment. You have to be with your head concentrated fully in the league, and that goal that Kashiwa conceded against Yokohama was, I think, that was a really good metaphor of how Kashiwa is starting to move down.
Yeah, they're in a world of hurt, and yes, just one spot outside the drop zone. And we mentioned that Nagoya's next opponent is Nagasaki after the international break. Well, Vivarin hosted Shonan in the only game played last Friday night, and it was a must-win game for the hosts, but unfortunately for them, they were not able to get it done. Shonan Bellmare came into Nagasaki and left with all 3 points after a 3-1 away win. The visitors were 3-0 up before your fellow Spaniard Juanma Adrian grabbed a consolation for the hosts with 20 minutes to go. So Shonan, a much needed win for them, their first win in six, keeps them above both Yokohama and Kashiwa Reysol, while Nagasaki's fifth straight loss, and they've not won in seven games, leaves them in a massive amount of trouble, 8 points from safety. And they battled hard early doors, Adrian, but it looks like it's going to be too much of a deficit for them.
I think so. I think this point of the league, it's also a question of being a veteran in the league. And Shonan, in the end, is a really tough team. And they know how to fight in J1. They have a long story of fighting in J1. While Nagasaki, their first season for them, you know, and the excitement of being in the first season at the beginning of the season, that I think that made them get some really useful points. But right now, they're showing that they're probably not the level that is expected of a team to stay in J1. So, I mean, I really like Nagasaki. I think Juanma is doing a great job, but right now, 21 points, bottom of the table. You know, they have few opportunities. The only thing they could think about is that in J2 we have now, I think it's Machida is right now first of the table, and because of how the license works, they might not get promoted to J1, so maybe we can have one season where only actually one J1 team gets relegated to J2. So it would be a shame if they are the ones to get relegated. Then, if you see a contest of who's doing worse, I would say it's between Nagasaki and Gamba. I think Gamba is really being really bad the whole season, and it shouldn't be a surprise that Gamba also ends up getting relegated.
Yeah, well, they've just had a massive win on Saturday night that obviously I'll be talking about with Neil in part two. But yeah, Gamba's last two wins are against the FC Tokyo and Kawasaki, the teams currently third and second in the table. So they've been able to raise their games against these opponents. Mm. But yes, almost all of the other results have been dreadful, as you said. And yeah, so I'll be getting Neil's thoughts on Gamba as well as his own side in part two in a minute. Well, let's finish with one more game from Saturday night, Adrian, because Shimizu have the same number of points as Nagoya. You have the same record, of although you have a game in hand, of course, in terms of wins and losses and therefore points. But Nagoya are above Shimizu on goals scored. Shimizu lost 2-1 at Sendai, and they lost right at the death when Naoki Ishihara headed in from close range in the 95th minute. So I think we can agree that Shimizu, they might have been in a spot of relegation bother. We might have thought they might have been sucked in a couple of weeks ago, and I suppose that's still a possibility, only 5 points clear of Tosu. But, yeah, this will have been a hugely frustrating loss for them, obviously, because they were looking almost certain to hang on for a point until Ishihara, stole all three for the home team in the 95th minute.
I mean, you have a point. Of course, Shimizu is not in a position right now where they can say they're safe from relegation. But again, 31 points. I don't know who's gonna be relegation this year. Maybe 41 points. Maybe I think Shimizu if they get three victories in the rest of the season, you know, three home games, I think they can keep their position in J1. So I think I don't think Shimizu are doing worse than Kashiwa or Gamba or Nagasaki, honestly. So they're in a bad position. Gamba had these important victories, but I think that in the long run, I think Shimizu is not playing what I from what I've seen from them, I don't think Shimizu is playing worse than Gamba, for example.
No, absolutely, and yeah, certainly Douglas has made a huge impact since he's come in in the summer transfer window. And I probably should say a little bit more about Sendai. I might do with Neil in part two, but yes, Sendai are now up to sixth in the table, and they're actually second in the form table. They've won four of their last five. They're up to 38 points, just three behind Sapporo and four behind third-placed FC Tokyo. So Sendai have really hit their straps in August, and yeah, massive credit to them. Obviously, they kept on going right to the end against Shimizu and got the reward on Saturday night. All right, Adrian, well, it's the international break, so you get to bask in the glory of Nagoya's seven-match winning run for a couple of weeks. Yes, there's no game for Grampus in the Levain Cup quarterfinals. Obviously, they didn't make it through, and neither did FC Tokyo, so it's a weekend off for my boys as well. So, yes, as I said, Nagasaki away back after the international break, and then a somewhat testing run. But as we said, the form that Grampus are in at the moment, you wouldn't put it past them to knock anybody off. So it's been great to have you back on the podcast, Adrian, and obviously in a much better mood than the first time you were on. So absolutely brilliant.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, massive congratulations. And as I say, yeah, let's hope it keeps going, because it's been the story of the second half of the season, obviously. So
Thank you so much.
Yeah, let's hope they keep it going. So thanks again, Adrian.
Thank you. See you next time.
Okay, then. Thanks again to Adrian Serna. I'll be back in a moment with Neil Debnam. Welcome back, and it's welcome back to J-Talk to Neil Debnam. Neil, welcome back. As I said, how are you?
I've been better.
You're just back from a terrific holiday, and yes, you unfortunately you had to sit through your Kawasaki side. Well, not necessarily blowing their shot at the title, but losing a game that they simply couldn't afford to in the title race away at Gamba Osaka on Saturday night.
Yeah, it was a bit grim, to be honest. But I think people are getting a bit sick of me whinging, especially considering we're second. But, well, if they're sick of hearing me whinge, you should probably fast forward a bit. So there's some whinging coming, so...
Yeah, it's been such a stop-start season for Frontale, hasn't it? And there have been numerous times throughout the year when we thought, okay, well, this might be the moment when they snap into life and they can really go on a run of consistent results, which is obviously what spurred you to the title at the end of the 2017 season. I mean, you'd won the two games heading into the World Cup break. You won the next two after the league resumed, but then you just haven't been able to really hit that purple patch of form consistently, have you?
Yeah, that's true. But I think basically the bad results we've got recently have been coming. I think we've been pretty average all year, and I can't believe we're in second, to be honest. I think maybe it says something about the league this year that everything's quite bunched up. Well, not necessarily bunched up, but there's no one who's really running away with it, which sounds stupid because Hiroshima are kind of running away with it, but they don't feel that better. They're much better than anyone, but I think lots of teams are playing much worse than they should be, so it's a weird one. Yeah, and it's pretty frustrating.
Yeah, well, I mean, we were speaking before we started recording, you can't believe that Kawasaki is second, and I certainly can't believe that FC Tokyo are third, and I mean, listeners don't want to hear me whinge about FC Tokyo again after the results in the last month or so, and there was another couple of points dropped at home on Sunday night, but I think you're right. At the end of the day, it does say a lot about the quality of the league. I mean, Hiroshima have done remarkably well in terms of consistent results, and that's what I was referencing before with Frontale, that they just haven't been able to put that really strong run together. Obviously, as I said about the results either side of the World Cup, but then you lost to Urawa away in match day 19. Then the results were a couple of wins in a row after that against Yokohama and Shimizu. But then the Tosu home game, that 25 shots to 2, 0-0. But then you went to Hiroshima, and we thought you'd breathed a proper life back into the title race after FC Tokyo had blown their chance to put real pressure on Hiroshima. It looked like you guys had done just that with the 2-1 away win over the leaders in match day 23. You needed a Kengo special to beat Sendai 1-0 last week, but then, yeah, Saturday night obviously has probably dealt a hammer blow to your title chances, even though, of course, you do have a game in hand, so you could potentially get back to within 6 points of Hiroshima. But as I've said a couple of times already, it's just been one of those seasons.
Yeah, definitely. And I can't complain about the result on Saturday, because we deserve nothing from the game, and that's exactly what we got. So, kind of the Hiroshima game. I mean, I didn't see it at all, because I was literally on the airplane at the time, and for some reason British Airways were giving 1 hour's Wi-Fi free. So about 4 or 5 hours into the flight, I checked the result and was like, "Oh, pretty satisfied about that." Mm. And then came home, watched the highlights. That looked like a sort of reasonable performance, but I think maybe that's also another one of our problems, is that we play kind of okay when we're playing teams up around the top, but the teams near the bottom we're pretty hopeless against. I mean, like you just mentioned, it's Sagan Tosu and Gamba, who are both right down there, and they were pretty bad results. And our game in hand is against another team who are right down there, Shonan, and local rivals. I can't see us winning that either, to be honest. It's a really strange year for us. I think a lot of people disagree with me because I'm constantly whinging about Oniki, our wonderful leader. But I put pretty much all the blame at his door. But I don't know. There just doesn't seem to be any kind of morale in the team at the moment. It's people look upset. People look bored. We lost a couple of players. I mean, Okubo I can understand, and to be honest, we didn't really need him back at the start of the year, but he was doing a job off the bench. But Neto, Eduardo Neto was made me a little grumpy, I have to say, because that I'm pretty sure the rumours are that was down to Oniki basically having dropping him in favour of our new star Morita, and Neto didn't like that much, as you'd expect, because Morita's just straight out of university, and I mean, I just can't stop whinging. But Oniki has his favourites. He really has his favourites, and he really has players who he doesn't like as well. And his team selection is pretty consistent. But if you get on his wrong side, you disappear. And Neto got on his wrong side, and we know Neto gets on well with Kazama from the season they had together at Frontale. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't really a surprise. We'd wondered if it had happened all year, and his dropping by Oniki for no apparent reason was enough to probably make up his mind and think, I don't actually need to work with this guy anymore. And I can quite understand it, but he was one of my favourite players, so I'm pretty sad. But he's probably the first of a few who are going to leave. I think we're going to lose quite a few players at the end of the year if we don't lose Oniki.
Right. Yeah, well, obviously Adrian was raving about the impact that Eduardo Neto has had in defensive midfield for Nagoya. Since he's come in, he's walked straight into that team and, really stiffened them up at the back of midfield in front of their new central defensive partnership of Maruyama and Nakatani. So, that transfer definitely worked out in Nagoya's benefit. And, I can understand why you would have been frustrated to lose him, Neil, because, he's obviously a terrific player in his time with Frontale, and a key player last year when you won the league for the first time ever. And I don't know, is it not to drag you down even further, but I mean, is this season back to inconsistent old Frontale for you? I mean, we wondered whether the team would turn a corner for good after finally claiming that first top flight trophy, you know, last season. Yeah, so is this a reversion to the mean and Kawasaki back to just being their flaky old selves?
I mean, possibly, but at the start of the year, we should have walked it this year, I feel. I mean, I know that sounds, I mean, people are going to hate me for that as well, but we had an amazing squad. We still got a pretty good squad, but I don't know, it's just like, well, I don't know, Oniki has managed to turn great players into average players. I mean, we click every couple of games, well, Kobayashi does anyway, basically, and if Kobayashi can score, he's great, but he'll spend the next game passing the ball back to the opposition keeper, basically. And I mean, the thing about the Gamba game was, I think we had a decent amount of shots. I mean, we didn't set the world alight, but I'm pretty sure their keeper didn't have to dive,
yeah.
which, you know, it's not very good if you can do your whole 90 minutes of goalkeeping on your feet, really. It's just, we just shoot at the keeper or we shoot over the bar for a couple of games, and then one game we click, and then we're back to the old thing again. I mean, we probably shouldn't have won against Sendai either. I mean, it was just another bit of dodgy defending that Kengo seized on, which is fantastic for a player of his advanced years. But apart from that, we didn't deserve anything from that game either. And very melodramatic, but recently I'm going to games with despondency, basically. We are going to Kashima away in the Levan Cup on Wednesday, and the thought of that bus ride during a typhoon to Kashima, who I really don't like them, and we're in terrible form, and we've now lost four players, three to the World Cup. And the World Cup, that's a bit of early preparation. Three to the national team, and one who was, Oshima was in the national team, but then got injured. So we're without four of our starting 11. And when you consider Oniki has his starting 11 and pretty much no idea after that, this is, I can't see we're going to win that game. And we could quite easily go from being in contact in three competitions to being out of three competitions and just hoping for an Emperor's Cup win by the end of the week, really. We've got two games against Kashima, the second one at Ajinomoto, which is going to be a bit weird.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
But yeah, it looks like we could go from three chances to one chance in the Emperor's Cup, and we've played terribly in the Emperor's Cup so far this year, so could be pretty grim at the end of this week, I think.
All right then. Well, yes, we'll see what will happen in the two games against Kashima in the the Levain Cup, as you referenced there, Neil. Well, we better give Gumba their due for their 2-0 home win on Saturday night. I mentioned with Adrian at the end of part one there that, yeah, Gumba's last two wins are against FC Tokyo and Kawasaki. The team's currently third and second in the table. So they've been able to raise their game in those two games against teams so high up the table. But yes, the other results have been pretty woeful in recent weeks for Gumba. But yes, a very important 3 points for them. Kazuma Watanabe in the 7th minute and then Fabio 10 minutes into the second half. Both goals basically came from Yasuhito Endo corners. The first was headed against a post, and Watanabe lashed in from inside the 6-yard box. And then in the second goal, Endo's corner made it all the way to the back post where Fabio was unmarked and, bundled the ball into the net off his knee. So, obviously, yeah, we've spoken a number of times on the various guests have this season, Neil, about Gumba's struggles. But, yes, a much-needed 3 points for them. What did you make of the way they went about things, especially once they'd taken an early lead? Did you feel that they were ever really wobbly? Because in recent weeks, in recent months, actually, they've really struggled to hang on to leads. They've dropped a number of points from winning positions.
I think they were lucky to go ahead against us, basically, because we're the one team who if we're not on a, well, I mean, there's probably many, but we're a team who, if we're not on a good day, we're not going to score, it seems. I said to my wife, 7 minutes in when they scored, I said, we're never going to score against this team, because they started slowing things down. We were playing with one up front and they had three centre backs, and I'm thinking, I don't think this is going to work, and it just looked like it wasn't going to be our day. But yeah, they were pretty solid, but I don't think they were really tested. I think I should apologise to one of the Gamba ball boys, and I didn't directly insult him, but there was quite a lot of time wasting going on from the team and the ball boys, and I said a bad word to him from about, you know, the other end of the stadium, but yeah, I felt pretty pretty appalling after that.
Okay.
He was only a kid.
Oh, well, I'm sure it's water off a duck's back if he's that young, so no worries, you don't have to lose any sleep over it. But, yeah, I mean, the 3 points for Gumba were much needed, as around them, Shonan and Yokohama both picked up wins, and Tosu, of course, got that point away at FC Tokyo. So Gumba made up a little bit of ground on them, and they are 5 points from safety now, with Kashiwa slipping down into 15th and Yokohama above them on goal difference. All right, so, yeah, we don't really want to prolong your pain any longer, Neil, by going over this game any further, but, yeah, credit to Gumba for getting the 3 points. Obviously, you came into the game on Saturday night hoping that Kawasaki would be able to keep up pace with Hiroshima, but that wasn't to be, and Hiroshima obviously took full advantage in their lethal and efficient way. They won 3-1 at home over Kashima Antlers. Actually went behind the Sanfrecce after a terrific goal on the counter-attack from Serginho, finishing off a two-man break with Yuma Suzuki. But then Patrick scored the first goal of his brace just before the half-hour mark. Ashil Sasaki grabbed the all-important second just 2 minutes before half time, and Patrick, 5 minutes into the second half, made it 3-1, and that's how it finished. Yes, Sanfrecce now 9 points clear of Frontale, although Kawasaki, of course, do have a game in hand. But if there is to be a title race, Neil, obviously Kawasaki will really have to hit their straps, and Hiroshima will have to go into a huge funk that looks really, really unlikely. Obviously, they've been so efficient all season, it looks unlikely in the first place, but I've had a glimpse ahead in the next couple of months to Hiroshima's fixtures, and in the next six league games they play, keeping in mind they only have nine left, FC Tokyo are the only top-half team they will play in those next six, and well, by the time those six games are over, FC Tokyo probably won't even be in the top half of the table anymore. So, yeah, it does look like it could be a cakewalk to the title for Hiroshima if they can hold their nerve and indeed keep grinding out these results. And I guess at the end of the day, a lot of people throughout the season have, had various things to say about the way they go about things, Sanfrecce, but it's a results business, and they have been getting results basically from the get-go, haven't they?
Yeah, it's true. And I'm moaning about them as well, because I don't like to watch that kind of football. But it's funny, I looked at the league table because I saw Frontale have conceded the least goals in the league, which I find astounding, equally with Hiroshima. And then I noticed that Hiroshima scored so many more goals than us. So I just have this impression of us, well, you know, maybe quite an old-fashioned impression now, that we're sort of free-scoring attacking team and they're dully grinding things out. But maybe they're grinding out some decent score lines. So, yeah, I've got to give them credit as well. I don't like to watch it, but yeah, I can't see them slipping up. They had a little blip, didn't they, after the World Cup, but yeah, we need something fantastic for us, our teams, but maybe not fantastic for them to happen. Yeah, I can't see it really.
Yeah, it just doesn't look like, I've given up. Yeah, it doesn't look like it's going to happen, does it? Even with that game in hand, yeah, I mean, that would only get you back to within 6 points. And yeah, I mean, that goal difference, even if it was to come down to that, would obviously be working in Hiroshima's favour, well, as it stands at the moment. But obviously, if they lose a bunch of games, then that will more than likely even up, or yeah, Frontale could even go ahead there. But yeah, as it stands, Hiroshima, 9 goals to the good in terms of goal difference, as well as 9 points over Frontale. And yeah, so behind FC Tokyo in third, and they've almost caught them now. Sapporo stayed fourth with a 3-1, an action-packed, an incident-packed 3-1 home win over Kobe before a crowd of just under 32,500. The biggest crowd of the J1 weekend was at the Sapporo Dome. A lot of them will have come to see Andres Iniesta mainly, and of course Lucas Podolski, the other big name foreigner playing his trade for Kobe. Well, it was an afternoon to forget for both of those gents. Lucas Podolski was sent off, shown a straight red card in first half stoppage time. He seemed to have quite a number of ants in his pants in the latter stages of the first half. Podolski got into it a little bit with the linesman. And then finally, well, he might have been looking to give the referee an excuse to send him off, and he slid in with the studs showing, and he obviously caught the Sapporo player. The referee basically went straight to his pocket, and yeah, Podolski remonstrated a bit with Ken Tokura before finally leaving the pitch. As has been his wont in recent weeks, Tokura had the last laugh. He got the second goal for Sapporo 5 minutes into the second half. That's after Daiki Suga had put Sapporo into an 11th minute lead with a superb header. Then, yes, as I said, Podolski sent off. Andres Iniesta was subbed off 10 minutes into the second half, and even though Shun Nagasawa scored a goal for Kobe, his first since moving from Gunma Osaka, with 11 minutes to go, that made it 2-1. Akito Fukumori finished things off with 7 minutes to go with a brilliant free kick that, I don't know if you saw it, Neil, but basically the Kobe keeper was still setting his wall. The referee blew his whistle to allow Fukumori to take the free kick, and basically, yeah, he passed the ball beside the wall and into the net while the keeper was trying to scramble across his line.
I haven't seen it, actually. I avoided all J-League since the final whistle on Saturday night, but yeah, that sounds like another an interesting refereeing decision.
Yes.
But, you know, it makes things interesting, I suppose. So.
Most definitely. All right, well, I referenced to Tokura. That's 11 goals for him now on the season, and he scored in 4 straight games. And, yes, he has helped spur Sapporo up to fourth in the table. As I say, just a point behind FC Tokyo. And interesting, Neil, as we'll come on to, Sapporo are Kawasaki's next opponents. That should be a cracking match at Todoroki in the first game back after the international break. Before we get onto that, though, there's one more game to wrap up, and it featured the goal of the J1 weekend for me. It was Cerezo Osaka winning 2-1 away at Urawa Reds. Tadanari Lee scored the first goal of the game in just the 12th minute. I was surprised. I thought, oh, well, that's unusual that Lee was starting, but he wasn't. In fact, he came on for Fabricio in just the 8th minute, and 4 minutes later, yes, he scored the first goal of the game to give Reds the lead. But then a couple of Cerezo's foreigners got them equal, and then, got them the 3 points. Osmar equalised just before the half-hour mark, and then Souza, the freckled ginger Brazilian, struck an absolute masterpiece 8 minutes into the second half. This is one you should definitely chase up on the highlight show, Neil, from 25 yards out on the right side of the box. Souza just arrows one top bin across Shusaku Nishikawa into his top right-hand corner. An absolutely spectacular goal, and a goal worthy of winning any match, and indeed might just win goal of the season in J1, an absolute pearler from Souza. So that saw Cerezo back up to fifth. Some of these teams have been playing musical chairs, Sapporo, Cerezo, and Kobe in the last a few weeks. Well, now Kobe are down to seventh, as I mentioned, with Adrian Sendai up to sixth after four wins in their last five. They've been in terrifically efficient form. Their only loss in that run, of course, was away at Kawasaki, and Kengo Nakamura's goal was enough to beat Vegalta on that day. But yes, otherwise Sendai have been spotless in the last month or so. So that's the all of the results from J1 Match Day 25 taken care of. And yes, well, there's a couple of things I want to touch on before we finish, Neil. But yes, you've mentioned the Levain Cup, and yes, a bus trip to Kashima in a typhoon on the Wednesday night. That doesn't sound too appealing to anyone, I suppose. But yes, you do it for love, not money, don't you? The other three Levain Cup quarterfinals are Shonan versus Cerezo Osaka, Kofu versus Kashiwa, and Gumba Osaka versus Yokohama. And yes, you didn't hear me wrong. Kofu of J2 have made it all the way through to the quarterfinals of the Levain Cup. On Sunday, the reverse fixtures will be played, and that means that for the third time, I think, this season, or maybe even more than that, Kofu's league match on the weekend has had to be rescheduled. J2 Match Day 32 takes place this weekend, but Kofu will host Omiya on Wednesday, September the 19th, to make up the game that they're missing this weekend because of their Levain Cup duties against Kashiwa Reysol. And Neil, before we go, wanted to just touch on the Japan squad. You mentioned that Kawasaki are very heavily represented in Hajime Moriyasu's first ever Japan squad. Japan play Chile at the Sapporo Dome on Friday night, the 7th, and then next Tuesday, the 11th, they play Costa Rica at the Suita Stadium. Yes, there is some injury news already after the squad was announced, after the weekend's games. Kawasaki's Ryota Oshima and Cerezo Osaka's Hotaru Yamaguchi have had to withdraw. Oshima injured his calf. I'm not sure exactly what happened to Yamaguchi, but he has pulled out. And today, yes, the JFA announced that Jun Amano has replaced Yamaguchi, and Kawasaki's own Hidemasa Morita has replaced Oshima. So for listeners who aren't all that familiar with Morita, Neil, as you said, he basically took Eduardo Neto's spot in the team. If he does make the pitch for Japan in either of these two games, so what should we expect from him?
Well, he's a great player, actually, and I like him. He's raw, though. I'm surprised he's got called up so soon. Oniki loves him. He'll play him in any position, basically. If there ever was a sub before he was a starter, it was probably going to be Morita on. He's kind of in the same vein as Neto, really, that he's probably more defensively minded in the midfield. But he's got some pretty good skills. Saying that, he had an absolute nightmare against Gamba. So I presumably Moriyasu wasn't watching that game.
Right.
Because if Moriyasu was watching that game, Kobayashi would have been kicked out of the squad and Kudemaya wouldn't have made it either, I don't think. But he's definitely one for the future. And I don't know. I mean, I keep making these fantastic predictions because the way I see it, the more predictions you make that are crazy, the better, because people remember the predictions if they're right and forget them if they're wrong. So it's kind of like a reverse boy who cried wolf, maybe, that I do better the more crazy predictions I make.
Right.
But I think there's a possibility that Morita could go to Europe, I think. And I mean, people are going to laugh at me for this, but everyone rates him. And you know, I think at the end of the season, maybe this season's too soon, the end of this season, but if he does well on in these two games, maybe, or if he gets a chance in these two games, maybe people might start looking at him, because I know all the big scouts, the scouts from the big European sides pay a lot of attention to Kirin Cup games. I presume these are Kirin Cup, are they?
Oh, absolutely. They always are, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely after the World Cup and the European Championship and the, you know, the South American Championship. That's the trophy that everyone's after. So the Kirin Cup with the big cardboard cutout of the beer can and the Chuhai and that. So, but yeah, I think he's definitely, he's a great player, but he's blowing hot and cold from game to game at the moment, I think. And I think part of that's because he's stolen, that's a bit rich. He's taken the place of Neto, who I really liked. But if we can hang on to him, I think he'll be a great player in the future. I think possibly on occasions he tries to be a bit too clever. Like, we've got Ienaga, who's pretty skillful player, and Ienaga can do these kind of weird, like, flicks and, you know, back heels and stuff like that. And I think, I mean, Morita's come on leaps and bounds this year, but I think it's probably a bit early for him to be doing that kind of thing. And he's done a few recently, and it kind of leaves a little bit of a bad taste in the mouth for me, because I don't really like sort of showboating. And it feels a little bit showy, especially if it doesn't come off. So, I mean, but yeah, I don't want to criticize him. I think he's a great player. Seems like a good lad as well. Still young, and he's important for us. And obviously we're not going to have him for the next two games. We're not going to have Oshima either. So that's the middle of our team ripped out. Kurumaya has been, to divert on back to Frontale, but Kurumaya has been playing at centre back recently because Oniki's frozen out two of our centre backs. Another one of my favourite players, Nara.
Nara, I thought you'd get a mention on the podcast. Yeah.
So Kurumaya's playing centre back, which is crazy because you've got a Japan international in your squad, a Japan international left back, and you play him at centre back. And I mean, the end of the game on Saturday, Oniki seemed to have realised that maybe Kurumaya's better on the wing at left back, so put our 1.68 Novo Rizzato as the sole centre back and pushed Taniguchi up. And at that stage, I'd kind of had enough with Oniki, and I probably gave him a piece of my mind. He didn't hear that either, so
right.
I just feel for the people sitting around him.
Yes, all right. Well, a couple of Kawasaki representatives in the squad, as we mentioned. Yes, Kurumaya and Yu Kobayashi, and Morita replacing the made of glass, it appears, Ryota Oshima. There's a number of interesting names in the squad. I won't go through it one by one, but obviously Morita and Amano, who have been called, who have been called up, are first-time call-ups. As are defenders Sho Sasaki of Hiroshima and Takehiro Tomiyasu, one of the Sint-Truiden brigade from Belgium. In midfield, Tatsuya Ito of Hamburg and Ritsu Doan of Groningen are first-time call-ups as well. And in goal, the third goalkeeper, well, we presume he's going to be the third goalkeeper because he can barely get in the Sendai team this year, is Daniel Schmidt. He's joined Masaaki Higashiguchi and Shuichi Gonda as the three goalkeepers called up. So, yes, seven first-time call-ups in total, including replacement players in the squad. And there are a number of interesting younger players called up, and Doan, I mentioned, for the first time to the senior squad, but Shoya Nakajima is one, obviously, who some people were calling to be in the World Cup squad. Well, Moriyasu has brought him in for the first time, and obviously a number of players, most of the World Cup squad actually are not involved here, so I'm sure there isn't a lot to read in to whether many of this squad will make the Asian Cup necessarily, but they're getting an opportunity to impress Moriyasu and his staff in the national team shirt, and that's great in these two games at Sapporo and Suita in the next week or so. So, yes, we hope that there won't be any more injuries in the camp. The players began training on Monday afternoon, and yes, ahead of the games on Friday and next Tuesday. And obviously we hope that everything works out for all of the teams in the Levain Cup in terms of injuries, as there are obviously a number of important games to come when the league resumes in a couple of weeks. And I think I've got a bit of a frog in my throat here, Neil, so it might nearly be time to finish. Sorry to have to call you onto the podcast after such a disappointing result for Frontale, but thanks as always for your honesty on the state of Frontale. Yes, it might be difficult listening for some of your fellow supporters who maybe are a bit glass half full at times, but yes, I can understand your frustration the way this season has stopped and started so many times. So for now, yes, we'd better leave it there before my voice completely gives out. But thanks for guesting again on the podcast, and hope to have you on again before the end of the season under better results and better circumstances.
Yeah, that would be nice. And one final apology from me, because I think I must be pretty irritating on Twitter with my whinging. So I'm sure some opposition fans quite enjoy my whinging because it means we're doing badly. But sorry, everyone. I can't help it. But yeah, thanks for having me anyway.
Always a pleasure, Neil. All right, then. Well, that is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. My thanks again to Adrian Serna and Neil Debnam, and, of course, to you for listening wherever you are. I'm pleased to announce that on next week's podcast we will have another J2 special, and it does appear that we will be getting the band back together with both Stuart Smith and John Steele in attendance. So look forward to that, fans of the second tier. Speak to you next week then. Bye for now.
The J Talk Podcast. Yes, 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 yes.